This is Minimalish. I'm your host, Desiree, and before we get started, let me be clear. This podcast isn't just about minimalism. It's a podcast about living fully. Over the past few years, I've learned that living with a little less in our homes and on our calendars leads to less cluttering up our minds, which simply helps give us the space to give our time and thoughts to the things that actually matter. So what do we talk about on here? We talk about minimalism and decluttering and how to get there, yes. But we also have conversations about pursuing intentionality in the things that matter, like our motherhood, faith, relationships, work, and mindset. Minimalish is a podcast for the woman committed to contentment and loving the life in front of them, committed to living with a little less so they can create space for the things that matter most. What it's not about, how many spoons you should have, or any kind of rules or legalistic minimalism that promises you'll be happier if you just get rid of more stuff. Getting rid of stuff isn't what will make you happy. It's about the life you live with the new space you find. If that sounds good to you, grab a mug of whatever you like and stick around. I'm so grateful you're here. Hey friend, welcome back to Minimalish. I am your host, Desiree, and I am so excited you're here. Today, I've got another Q&A with Catherine. Catherine comes on once a month, and we just answer questions that you all have asked us either through a question box that we put out on Instagram, or sometimes we have questions that we are just asked throughout the last month. So that's what we've got today. We've got a mixture. We talk about donation centers and donating things. We talk about home decor, and then we talk about parenting. We talk about being present with our families, and we talk about meal planning. So we've got a lot of different things we're talking about today. And just to note that these Q&A episodes are meant to share our ideas. They are here to just share with you our ideas, our perspectives on the questions that you ask us, but that doesn't mean that it has to work for you. What might work for us might not work for you. So we're sharing them with hopes that it inspires you to, one, feel like you are less alone in things that you might be struggling with. Two, maybe try out some of the ideas that we share. But three, ultimately, to reflect and find what might work for you. One thing before we dive in, though, you might have heard me talk about, if you listened to the last episode, the Minimalish Book Club. And that book club is starting this upcoming Sunday. But you can sign up before that so that you get all of the materials and getting ready to go. We are reading Chasing Slow by Erin Lochner. It is one of my favorite books on minimalism. And hey, can you say read?
Read.
Read with me.
Read again.
As you can tell, Gemma is super passionate about the Minimalish Book Club, and she's excited about it. So I hope you are too. I definitely am. And we are running this through Patreon. So if you go to patreon.com/minimalish, you'll see all the details. We have an author interview this time around. So that means in March, we'll read in February, and then in March, we will implement, we'll do a challenge, and we will have an author interview, which will be live with Erin Lochner. So just wanted to throw that out there as well. So head to patreon.com/minimalish to see all about that. I really hope you join us. Let's get to today's episode. We've got our January Q&A. I'm
glad to be here again.
Yeah, we've got some good questions this time. And I feel like we have a lot of them just because I think we both struggle with narrowing them down.
For sure.
They're just all so good. But We do narrow to the questions that, like, I think our narrowing is just the questions we feel most comfortable answering, because it's not that the other questions aren't good. It's just that I just wanted to throw that out there, because it's not like we can't answer every question, and the narrowing just goes for what right. We feel like we can speak to.
And also probably the most general questions that would fit a variety of audiences and like what most people would probably want to know. So if we're picking out questions, we try to keep that in mind too, that like, how can we cover a broader perspective?
Yeah, for sure. So we're going to start with questions on minimalism. We've got like three categories, sort of. We're going to talk on two questions that are really more minimalism focused, two to three-ish that are more about time and family, I would say. I don't know. I just kind of group these. And then two that are on systems. First one, when you started, where did you donate your stuff? This person who asked the question was feeling like they want everything to go to a good home. So what did you do about this?
So when I first started, we were in Mississippi. And because we had access to base, we had a donation center that was called Airman's Attic, and it went to all the stuff went to people in the military that needed equipment or extra home goods. They could shop around. Maybe people were at the base temporarily and needed things for their housing that they didn't want to bring or buy. So I would just kind of put everything there, and it was just because it was convenient and right there. But I also, I think I did Goodwill. We didn't have many spots down in Mississippi. It was a really, really small town. So I mainly stuck to Airman's Attic. But now here, if I need to donate things, I go to Goodwill. I kind of do what's convenient, what place takes the most stuff and has less restrictions on like what they can accept and stuff like that. We've donated light fixtures and old other fixtures from the house and the like house renovation. So Habitat Humanity has taken some stuff. There's also, I don't know if I've done this, but there's the veterans thing, and now I can't remember what it is, but they'll pick up your stuff. So honestly, yeah. Anywhere that just, you know, serves the purpose of taking your things to people in need. I didn't really have the perspective of I want things to go to a good home. I just knew that me getting rid of stuff, I would be helping other people out, but also helping myself out. And I think sometimes the idea of wanting everything to go to a good home can block us from continuing on our decluttering path, because we get stuck on the fact that our items are super valuable or important to people, or because they're important to us, they'll be important to somebody else. And it's not always the case. And so we put a higher value on our stuff than we really should. And so I don't think we should get caught up on where the stuff goes, as long as you have peace of mind that it's, you know, where it might be helping somebody out, I guess.
Yeah, I think that this is tough, especially when you're doing like a first time around purge and you have really a lot of stuff. Mm-hmm. First of all, it's overwhelming to declutter in the first place. It can feel overwhelming. So when we're tacking this on top of like this guilt of I want my stuff to go to a good home, it makes it even more overwhelming because it's another step in the process. Like, I would never suggest that someone goes and trashes everything, of course, you know, our stuff is, it does have value. It can be used again for someone else. But at the same time, there is going to be stuff that's trash. And I know the first time around, like, we did throw some things away. We donated a ton to Goodwill. I know there's stories out there that that's not necessarily the best option all the time. Of course, it's true that not just Goodwill, but there's a lot of donation centers, especially bigger ones, I'm sure, that not all of our stuff gets put on the floor. Like, it will go to landfills, or it gets sent overseas and it messes up another country's economy. Like, yes, that is true. That happens. But the bigger problem is that our consuming as a country is out of control. And probably, like, personally, I know my consuming was out of control. And that's what caused me to have all this stuff. So the bigger issue here is, how can I revamp my habits going forward? Because we can't change what happened in the past. And yes, we can think about, okay, there are great places that you can send it. First of all, you know, look into your local Goodwill. If that's the nearest place, look into it. Mine personally, the stuff that we send there oftentimes is back out on the floor. I see it there because I go there and I thrift as well.
I've done that too.
And so, you know, look into it. Go and check it out. See what it's like in there. I don't know. And then another option is, if you really care about this, then research it a bit in your area, because our suggestions, like, it might not be helpful for you because we live in a different area. But I think it's pickupplease.com or something. I could be totally wrong. I'll link it. The veterans thing. I know that's in a lot of areas where they will come and pick up your donations, and that goes to a good cause. If you have blankets and sheets and things like that, animal shelters. So if you have the time and capacity to take things to these places while you are also decluttering your entire home, while you also have whatever other responsibilities, then do that. But I would say that this is something to think about a little bit more in depth as we move forward, when one, we're curbing our consumerism habits, and two, as your maintenance decluttering and things are less overwhelming, then you can start to think about that. Like, oh, I have sheets I need to get rid of, and not like 1,000 other piles. Then I can take it to the animal shelter that's maybe 20, I don't know, my nearest one is like into the city where I never want to go there. But like, yeah, if I don't have other things.
Make the trip because you don't have other stuff. Yeah, I think that's a great way to look at it. It's like, how have we put ourselves in the position in the first place? How did we get here to begin with? And, you know, I talked to someone recently that was, she took her stuff and she had to have several people come help her unload her car. And she was like, the embarrassment alone from having to have multiple people unload all of this stuff really solidified for me that it was just so much stuff that I had just over collected. And I thought that was a really powerful moment for her, because she just was like, I don't ever want to feel that again. And the embarrassment is fleeting. You know, it's there. It serves a purpose. It makes us aware of our habits that are damaging in one way or the other to us and to others and to the environment. But it serves a purpose, and you kind of have to lean into it. You kind of have to be overwhelmed with, wow, I really wasted all of these things, and I am really contributing to a massive worldwide problem. So I would say, don't be afraid of that feeling, because I think we use the idea of, I want it to go to a good home to combat our guilt. And the guilt should be there for a second, because that's when you decide that you're going to make real changes and that you're not going to do this again. So I'd say just lean into it. Fine. There's other places too. You know, there are places that take newborn stuff that need moms, crisis pregnancy centers, churches, food pantries. They all have connections. So I would say, if you're really looking for other sources, check with your local community.
Okay, so we've got a home decor question, and I'm giving this one pretty much entirely to you. Someone actually messaged me about this, and I didn't get the chance to answer it, mostly because I don't feel as, like, I don't feel, just like we said in the beginning, like, I don't feel as qualified to answer this, because it just doesn't resonate with me as much, but yeah. It's about home decor. I like it, but I don't spend much time on it because it's not one of my giftings. So it is one of your giftings. And this
sometimes,
this lovely person, she loves decorating her home. She loves home design, styling. And it's just like a passion of hers. Her question was basically, do you have any input on, like, how to quiet the voice that tells me that this space needs a new look when the current look isn't necessarily outdated? And she also noted, which I think is important, that it's not a budgeting issue. It's not something to where she's overspending. Like, she thrifts a lot of items, she said, and she resells them when she's done with them. And although that's kind of a really specific question and the way that she approaches it, I think this idea of minimalism and also having an eye for design and loving design. How do these, the two things go together? Is it bad that we have this impulse in wanting to redecorate and, I don't know, make an area beautiful? I don't know if that question fully makes sense, but Not the way she asked it. The way she asked it made sense, but it was long and personal, so I don't want to share all of that here. But the way that I've shortened it, does that make sense?
Yeah.
Do you feel like you can answer that?
Yeah, okay. Absolutely. And I think the main root of this question is, like, not so much that it's almost like getting permission to have that passion, but how can it manifest itself healthily in our homes and in our wallets, you know? And this is different than saying, I have a shopping problem and I like home decor and I'm, you know, impulsively buying stuff to redecorate my house. It's more like, I have this passion and I want to use it and be a good steward of what's been given to me, or what I'm, you know, what can I afford and stuff like that. So I really relate to this, because I think that home styling and decorating is a form of art, And I think it's a very important creative outlet for a lot of people. And I don't think you should squash that. I don't think it's not something that you need to look at negatively and think like, oh man, I'm really frustrated that I have this drive in me to rearrange the room or redecorate. I don't think you need to look at it that way. I think it's actually a positive thing because not everybody has that gift. And if you're given that gift, it's there for a reason. But obviously the problem lies in how do we execute those things, being mindful of the amount of stuff and what we spend. So regardless if you have all the money in the world or no money to spend, you can still do the same things and have good decorating style and still execute those things in your home. So for me, and this is like something that a lot of us minimalists do on Instagram as we shop our home. And I know sometimes it can be frustrating for the people that live with us that we are redecorating and rearranging furniture and things like that. But the way I look at it, and Luke has lived with me long enough and seen this in me, that for me, it's therapeutic. Instead of going out and shopping and trying to redesign a whole room, I am sorting through my things, finding out what I want to display, and honoring the items that I own by putting them in a beautiful way, like pictures, putting them up on the wall, or displaying the things that we've been given that we do love. And while it's not about the stuff, obviously, you are still living in your home and you're allowed to look at things that make you happy. And so if you're coming from the mindset of like, I want this space to trigger happy emotions for me, I want to stop fighting my home because of discontentment or whatever, how do I make the things that I already own beautiful? And so if you're really into that stuff, there are so many cheap ways and easy ways to do that. And I've talked about this before. Paint is like the easiest way to like turn over a space. And you're not buying items that sit around. You are buying a can of paint. You're doing something artistic. You're moving your body. You're channeling that creative outlet, but you're changing a space. But then you can toss the can of paint after you're done or whatever. So, you know, and she's also saying like she thrifted a lot of items and she does the whole selling and buying thing. That can get tricky too, because you're still not like being disciplined about what you're purchasing. And I think, you know, the one in, one out rule is good. But if you can get to a point, maybe this is where her kind of like doubt is coming in. If you stop the buying and selling completely and then utilize that passion with only what you have, you know, sometimes it can help the problem, or it can, that's not what I would say. Like it can channel the passion in a better way. 'Cause I had to stop buying things completely at a certain point and just decorate with what I already owned. And that came in with like paint or doing something else or whatever. So we do have to be careful about always buying and selling and redecorating, even though we're keeping the same amount of items, but we're still shopping. So I guess if there's any advice there, just be mindful of that. But other ways to channel that passion are help a friend out. Like if they have a space that they want to redecorate and they can't spend any money, go help them and do a room makeover. There are local places that might need help, like a church might need help doing a kid's room, or I don't know, there's like other forms, or a family member. If they want you to like, you have such a great style, how about you help me make over this room really quick? And I'm telling you, it's so easy. A can of paint, rearrange your furniture, and then get rid of so many things that you only keep the items that you really love and display those in a nice, honoring way. So I don't know if all that made sense. I kind of moved really quickly through that. But I understand the impulse. It's something that I don't think will ever go away for me. And I just have to be really disciplined about my choices. But I think the biggest thing is that if I'm sticking to my true style and design that I love first, I usually don't want to redecorate. Because if I'm sticking to those choices and the colors that I already know I love, I probably won't want to change it as much. And I know you guys have seen me like rearrange my house a bunch on the Insta blog, but I'm not bringing in a whole lot of items. you know, I'm pretty much just moving things around that already exist in my house, and every room can go together in some way because they're all the same style and colors. So just remember to stick to your style, and then you won't be tempted by other trends or whatever, which triggers the buying and selling habit. So
yeah,
hope that made sense.
Yeah, it definitely did. And I think, too, it's just about listening to your own convictions, because this question can really, I mean, it is about home decor, but it can be broadened of just like, how does any passion that you might have fit in with minimalism? Like, if you're a crafter, like, how does this fit with minimalism? Like, if this is who a part of you and this is who you truly are, minimalism isn't necessarily meant to, it's not here to change the, like, in most giftings that you have and the things that you're passionate about. So listen to your own convictions, as in, is it actually a conviction that you're having? And is this something that is truly tripping you up and hindering you and hindering your home? Right. And is it a consumerism issue, or is it something that you just feel like, because of what you see others doing or talking about with minimalism, you feel like you're doing it wrong? Like, there's permission to still love the things you love and express yourself with art, like you said.
That's a good approach. I think what people need to know is that you don't have to sacrifice your interests and your passions for the sake of minimalism. That is not the point at all of what we do. We actually are trying to make more time to do the things that we love and make more space for it. And, you know, when you declutter a room and you want to redecorate it and display those things, it's you realize what you really love. And I think that is the whole point of minimalism, is to narrow down a space or your home or your mind to a point to give you the time and the energy to put it into the things that you love. So I love that minimalism has allowed me to redecorate my home with the things that I own. And it gives me literally the time, because I'm not doing anything else. I'm like, well, I can change the space because I'm not going to go out and buy anything else. I already own the stuff. I just want to see it oriented differently. So there's nothing wrong with that.
I hope you're enjoying this conversation, but I want to take a second to thank today's sponsors making this episode of Minimalish possible. Let's start out with talking about the fact that Valentine's Day is around the corner, and there's nothing wrong with a holiday that celebrates reminding our loved ones that they are loved. I am all about the consumable edible gift. Today's sponsor has the perfect consumable gift, Baked by Melissa. Who doesn't love bite-sized cupcakes? That's Baked by Melissa's specialty. These cupcakes are beautiful, and there are so many different flavors to choose from. There's white chocolate, cookies and cream, red velvet, milk chocolate, dulce de leche. I know I'm saying that wrong. There are vegan and gluten-free options, and my personal favorite thing about these cupcakes are the fact that they are bite-sized, so that you or your loved one, whoever you're sending these cupcakes to, they can try all of the flavors. Plus, they'll want to try multiple flavors because these cupcakes are delicious. Baked by Melissa makes it really easy to send these cupcakes to someone that you love. They offer 1 to 2 day shipping nationwide, and I find the website to be super easy to use. The last day for standard shipping for Valentine's Day delivery is February 12th at 2 p.m. Eastern. This Valentine's Day, send your loved ones the perfect gift, Baked by Melissa. Go to bakedbymelissa.com/minimalist, that's minimalist with a T, and use promo code minimalist to get 15% off your order. bakedbymelissa.com/minimalist and use promo code minimalist to get 15% off your order. Take advantage of this special offer for listeners of Minimalish and enjoy these cupcakes. I also want to thank Native. Did you know that many conventional deodorants contain aluminum, which actually plugs up your sweat glands to keep you from sweating, which cannot be healthy, right? Native's deodorant is made without aluminum so that you can feel better about what you're putting on your body. Native has literally 9,000 five-star reviews, and they've been featured on The Today Show, Elle Magazine, Pop Sugar, just to name a few. Their products, like their five-star rated deodorant, are formulated without aluminum,
parabens, and talc. And it's worth it to say no to these toxins when it comes to products that we use on our bodies every day. This deodorant is filled with ingredients that you can actually pronounce and understand, like coconut oil, shea butter. Their products have free shipping and returns, and they work. I've tried other natural deodorants. Nothing quite works like Native. I love that I don't have to reapply for it to work. It just keeps working all day. I love their scents. I personally love the eucalyptus and mint, but they have something for everyone, like coconut and vanilla, lavender and rose. Plus, they have seasonal scents and an unscented baking soda free formula for those with sensitivities. For 20% off your first purchase, visit nativedeodorant.com and use promo code minimalish20 during checkout. That's 20% off your first purchase at nativedeodorant.com with promo code minimalish20. All right, friend, let's get back to this episode. Okay, so the next few questions that we have are on this idea. I put as the category like time, family, and parenting, which are all kind of different things. But it's mostly, I think, about at least the first ones we'll approach are about really being present. And the first one says, how do we have intentional time with family without feeling like our household duties are being neglected? And for me lately is I feel like my mantra about just cleaning and tidying in general or even cooking right now has been either I involve her in it or mm-hmm. I don't do it. It's just like it doesn't get done while she's awake unless I involve her in it in some way. And it's like I have to invite her into it. And this is not to say that's what anyone has to do. It's just what works for me and the personality of my child. Mm-hmm. If I don't invite her into it, she will like try to put a stop to it because she wants my attention and she's two. And so that's kind of what I've been doing. If I'm vacuuming, I let her push the vacuum for a second or two until she finds something else to do. If I'm cooking, she has a little kitchen helper that she can stand up on and I stand her away from all the unsafe things and I pretend she's helping me in some way if it's not safe for her to actually help me. And she'll get uninterested and she'll go and play on her own. But it's just that's the only way that I can. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that's really answering this question, but it's almost like I make my intentional time mm-hmm. also.
They can coexist.
Yeah, exactly. That's it. Yeah.
Yeah.
I hope that makes sense. I'm really not great at this, but this is just what's been helping me.
Yeah, I think that's a great answer. I think that they want to be involved. And I think it's important that they see that we are taking care of our home and teaching them how to take pride in the things that we've been given. And so I think that's a great way to do it is because you can have a foot in both worlds. Like you don't have to, you know, it's not one or the other and they're not mutually exclusive. So I love that answer. Owen likes certain things, certain chores that I do and he'll do them with me. But then there are things that it just goes south really quickly if he's involved. So for me, I've had to narrow down what my non-negotiables are. I've had to prioritize the things that I really need done to help my mental health and my peace of mind. And then the things that are okay for me to let go and wait on or whatever until I have a moment of freedom to do them. So, like for me, I really don't like a dirty kitchen. So if I can straighten it up by myself for just a little bit of time, that makes me feel like I can be fully present, with Owen and Luke, you know, if there is a mess that's your non-negotiable, I think there's an article, I'll have to find it, maybe send it to you or whatever, but it's like telling moms, like, do the dishes. If they're bothering you that much and you're so distracted and cannot be present with your family, go do the dishes. They're going to take 5 minutes if you've minimized to a point where you can handle them. Like, and that is the purpose of, what we teach here about minimalism is that your chores should be shortened so that you have more time with your family. And the goal of having less is having less to do so that you're not having to choose between chores and household duties and your family. Like obviously family comes first. So decide what your non-negotiables are. And if it's taking you too long, it might be important to kind of look at the stuff that you're having to sort through all the time just to accomplish that duty. And I think I've said this before, if you're touching an item so many times and frustrated by whatever task is involved in that duty, then maybe you can delete the task that's making you frustrated and eating up your time. So just play around with how your system is working. And if it's not working and you're not getting more time with your family, then it may be time to reevaluate how that works. So, yeah, I think you can decide what's important to you. Like, if you can't rest until you see vacuum lines on your carpet, like, do that. Take the 2 seconds and do it, and then go be with your family. But, yeah, I think it comes down to how, you know, what really bothers you and what doesn't if you're distracted. So it's okay to want to have a clean house. It's okay to want to have a straight house and have things done for your mental health, because odds are, if you have kids, at least for me, like I said, the dishes are my thing. I have to redo them again later. So I need to reset my kitchen so that it can be utilized efficiently later. So,
yeah, that's good. I think that it is really a mindset thing. I know the question that I will get sometimes is, even though I've decluttered, like, I'm still cleaning up my house all the time. And one reason for that could be that you still have too much stuff than would work well for your house. Or another reason is there's something that is making you want to keep busying yourself up. Like, are you finding worth or identity in having a completely, perfectly tidy home, even though you've got little kids running around that are going to make messes? And I just feel like the only way to stop cleaning up all the time is to stop cleaning up all the time. You know, you have
exactly.
You have to actually just stop and just sit. And but yeah, sometimes it is. It's just the mindset shift of, it doesn't have to be perfectly tidy all the time. Exactly. Like you said, those non-negotiables. I love that idea, because that makes so much sense. It's like, what things will make you feel at peace, and then you can actually rest and be a little bit more present. Okay. And then this one is one that I just wanted to touch on really quickly, because I know it's such a good question and it's so specific, but we'll just kind of open it up to, like, I don't know, toddlers in general. But it says, how do you deal with a sassy 15-month-old that's refusing to play alone or is defiant? And I do think that this is very specific to that age. For me, at least, I experienced something similar, like 13, 14, 15 months is just, I think I felt like, what am I doing and how, like, how do I get through this? This is the hardest. Even now, when I feel like it's a tornado, like, running around my house all day, but she's so much more independent. And at 15 months, it's like, it's a tornado of all kind of things, emotions. They're really having all the feelings. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And they can't communicate quite yet. And not easily, at least. And it's just a struggle. So, one, you're not alone. That's really why I wanted to put this question here, is you're not alone. And I honestly, looking back, I just think the only thing that got me through was remembering that this time is limited and it is short and it will change. I remember, I always think about the fact that week by week things change. 1 week it's great, the next week it's really hard. So in the middle of a hard week, I try to remind myself that next week it could be less hard. And in those hard weeks, it does feel like a whole month, or it feels like an eternity. That is just what I still remind myself when it's a hard week. And if you can ask for help, if you have people nearby that can help, or just, like, be with friends that have kids too, that's a great way to get through it. I know sometimes with a 15-month-old, I don't think I wanted to. Like, I didn't want to have play dates. I just didn't want to deal with all of that. But
I was a recluse for sure.
Yeah, but I definitely... I have family nearby, so that helps. And not everyone has that. But yeah, if you can get 20-minute breaks have a spouse, when a spouse comes home, go lock yourself in your room for 20 minutes and breathe. And then when it comes to the actual child and the actual parenting, I love Janet Lansbury for all toddler things. And she has a podcast and she has a book, and I think it's called Unruffled, her podcast. And she talks about respectful parenting, and I can 100% like get behind that and feel like it has worked for my child. I don't know that it worked for every child, but that's kind of the resource I want to throw out there, because I cannot tell you how to do it necessarily, but she is much more of an expert on it.
That's good. I remember this time. I think if I can remember correctly, when Owen was 15 months around that age or whatever, I'm pretty sure Luke was deployed, or at least about to be deployed. And it's really hard. And I only have one kid, and I don't know what it's like with multiples at this age, you know, so I can't speak to like the layers of, you know, that kind of thing. But I remember being alone, and, you know, Owen was giving me a really, really hard time. I mean, my friends that are local can tell you it was really, really hard. And there was a couple things that we can do. And I think this is not an original idea. My good friend here told me this, and I don't know the original source that quoted this, but she said something really powerful to me, is that we have to wonder, if are they giving us a hard time, or are they having a hard time? And when she told me that, I really took it to heart, because so often we assume that they are being defiant. And obviously there are so many factors that can go into why they're behaving the way that they are. Is it pain? Are they frustrated? Can they not communicate what they want? And Owen was not a kid that would play alone. He still is not a kid that will play alone. He likes to be with us. I can maybe get 5 or 10 minutes out of him. But I've had to come to this acceptance that this is just not my kid. And sometimes we wish for things that just may not happen. And that acceptance, when you finally are okay with like, well, other kids can play alone, but why can't my kid? It might just be that you have a different child. And when you can accept who's in front of you, you can be a lot more patient and lean into what's actually happening a lot easier. And I had to really come to terms with that. There were some things I could do to get him to be alone, but for the most part, he didn't like playpens. He didn't like gates. There was nothing that could make him happy pretty much in that time frame. And he was a really bad teether. And so he had all these things going on, and it would come across that he was just a really irritable, angry, defiant toddler. But that's not the case. He has a lot of emotions that are just buried that I had to access first. And he has to be secure with me before he can be secure alone. So I've had to really kind of go through all of that. And I was, you know, doing it solo parenting. And I think you've really just got to look inside yourself. Like, this sounds so cheesy, but like, are you accepting who's in front of you? Are you accepting that your child is like this, or one way or the other? And one way you can really find out what kind of personality that your child has, there's a couple of resources. And my friend, the same friend who gave me that great quote, told me about Birds on a Wire podcast with Karen Stubbs. And she's amazing. She talks about the different color personalities kids can have, and how to discipline, how to parent them according to their color personality. And I still am like, the jury's out on Owen sometimes, because he can like be all of them. But when you kind of determine what your child is like, it will help you so much determine what techniques, behavioral techniques and disciplinary parenting techniques, that will be effective for your specific child. And there's also the Highly Sensitive Child book, that if you're running into walls sometimes about what to do, that book is a great resource to understand like toddler sensitivities and kid sensitivities and things like that. But the best thing, and I said this to another friend today, is that you have to remember, as a mother, like, you were created to be that child's mother. You are equipped to handle whatever that child is giving you. You were designed to be that mother. And in that is empowerment of like, you know, I can do this. No matter what is happening, I was meant to be that child's mother. And you've really got to embrace that, even though it's so hard and so frustrating. Those days can be so long. Your house is a mess afterwards. But though, that time is a very good learning time and bonding time between you and your child. And I know that when I was alone, I really learned a lot about Owen and came to terms with a lot of things. And now Owen and I are like buddies. Like, we're like little BFFs, and I have accepted that he's just who he is. And I don't know, it's just easier that way.
Yeah. And I think too, there's so many resources out there. And I think the biggest thing for me has been just this idea of like the way this question is asked is just like, how do you deal? And just thinking about what is this, what am I supposed to learn in this situation? Like, how am I supposed to change and grow? Because I think a lot of times, like, we're meant to parent and love and, you know, parent our child and bring them up in the way we want them to be. Like, most of us want our kids to be kind, and most of us want our kids to be loving and accepting of others and whatever it might be. But how are we reacting to them? Like, are we being those things that we want our kids to be? And of course we have to have grace with ourselves because we are human and we are going to make mistakes. But I think about that all the time of just, what is this season meant to teach me? How am I supposed to change and grow in this season? And I write down every morning, like, one of the ways I literally deal with this is through writing down and praying through this idea of, I am a gentle and patient mother. And I feel like I say that all the time. So sorry if you've heard me say that 1,000 times, that that's one of my affirmations, because I say that on the podcast. But it just helps me at least get focused on, that's where I'm headed. That's who I want to be. And doesn't mean that in the middle of the day I am that, but it's something that I know I can't do it on my own. Like, I have to rely on my faith for that and my faith in God. But it does help to just have those mantras. And that's one way that I get through the harder weeks. Okay, so we have two questions on systems, and they're really about the same thing. It's about eating and working out. Two of my favorite things to talk about. Not really. This is like one of my struggles of my life, and I'm sure so many people feel that way too. But simplifying meal prep and eating healthy without buying into expensive trends. Yes. I thought that was a great question. So what do you do for meal prep?
Well, I can't say that I am great about meal prep. I don't even like that phrase for me. In my mind, meal prep, I think of people who are super disciplined, who, you know, split their meals into containers and they really are organized. And I'm not that way. I am a very flexible, relaxed person when it comes to cooking because I hate it so much. And if I'm adding rules and parameters and regulations to how I cook, then I'm not going to do it at all. And that would not be good for my family. So, in my mind, personally, Luke and I come from really different ideas about food. He really loves, I think I've spoken on this on the blog, but like, he loves lots of flavors and trying out different things. He's super adventurous, and I am not. I struggle with food sensitivities and stomach problems. And, you know, I like bland food because it agrees with me better. So we've had to kind of find a happy medium between that. But we are on a health journey this year, which, you know, resolutions. I want to, like, I roll at that, but it's true. And one of the ways I've had to simplify part of this is that I've had to really figure out the foods that agree with me and don't, and really avoid the things that don't. So I did a Whole 30 in 2018, and I found out that gluten and dairy just aren't for me. And so we focus on whole food eating the right nutrition. And I don't really meal prep. I have to say it's really bad. Sometimes I will. I do that veggie tray, prep veggies at the beginning of the week and put it in a serving tray, and we pick from that and stuff like that. But so for me, simplifying has been identifying the actual foods that we all like and can agree on. And then if I can get a meal in, like, prepared in like 30 minutes, 45 minutes to an hour, like hour at the most for me, then I would say that that works really well for me. So we do we do fish and veggies or chicken and veggies. We'll do a crock pot meal or an Instapot. I'm personally just not tempted by fancy food or expensive trends. But Luke is. And so there are times that I do have to make allowances for him to be able to have that focus on what's important to you guys. Is it important to save your time when you're meal prepping? Is it important for you to eat the right foods? Are you really interested in food? So is it important to you that you want to taste something really gourmet? Like, it's a passion. Like, you know, we're talking about home decor. Food can be a passion. So are you willing to invest more money in your food? So I think it's really tough. And I don't know. That's a tough one.
Yeah, I think different seasons bring different systems for food for anyone and for us specifically. And if I tried to stick to one thing all the time, I'd probably go crazy. Like right now, we are in the season of wrestling season, and Nick is like, there are most days Nick is not home till very late. And then a couple of days a week, he is not home until like past Gemma's bedtime. Mm-hmm. So there right now, I mean, I don't make dinner every night or even prep a meal because of that. And a lot of times Gemma and I are with family when that happens, when on nights when he's not home. So if I prep for all week, we'd probably waste food. And so I have to just think about what does our life look like. And I think the biggest thing that helps me is looking at, and I don't do this every single week, but is looking at like what my life actually looks like that week. So that's kind of a practical step is one, and this is also going to help your budget because you're not going to waste as much. Look at what that week looks like for you. Are there days when you're going to need to have food more on the go? Are there days when, you know, maybe not everyone's going to be home and it can just be something super simple? Or can you utilize leftovers? Can you do kind of like a charcuterie, whatever, however you say that. Sorry.
Oh, yeah.
And just do like veggies and, you know, cheese and or whatever it is that you eat and crackers, whatever, just something simple and have everyone eat kind of like a snack-ish dinner that still has healthy aspects to it. We've struggled in the past with, I grew up going out to eat a lot and we try not to do that anymore. One, it's not fun to do with a toddler, but two, for budgeting reasons. So it's taken me at least a year to finally feel like I know what to get. I know how much I need to get us through the week and not go back to the grocery store and add to the budget or end up ordering out. Not that it doesn't ever happen, but I just think it takes time. And there are so many resources that will prep food for you out there, or not prep food, but like send you plans. There are so many resources of people talking about meal prep, like Debt Kicking Mom has an amazing low budget, super inexpensive cookbook that has meal plans in it. And it's just, it's all like in what you want and what will work for your family.
Agreed. And two things that I do, not every week, but I mean, most weeks, is I shop my pantry at least one meal if I can stretch it to not have to grocery shop, because I want to avoid the grocery store like the plague. I hate it so much. So we really do try to shop our pantry. So we do keep staples around like rice and quinoa and frozen veggies or whatever that we know that we can just like make really quickly. And they're foods that we like that we're willing to eat, but we know it's not going to be like the world's most tasty dish. But shopping your pantry is really good. And then the other thing is like make a theme night for each night that you can adhere to, that can you can create the recipe or the meal plan that fits that day. So like some families do Italian night on Mondays, Tuesdays Taco Tuesday. You could do tacos several different ways, you know. You could eat out one night if that's important to you, or breakfast for dinner one night. And I was going to say, too, is that I feel like with obviously social media and whatnot, we always think that people are doing it better than us and that the average mom is like a chef and really organized and that has her containers, has her recipes. And while there are many, many moms and wives out there that do that, you know, the majority of us all struggle with this. Like, it is hard feeding a family. And if you don't enjoy it, like I don't enjoy it, or even if you do, it's still labor, it's still work. And so we always think that people are doing it better than us and that we need to keep improving and whatnot. And sometimes it's okay to tell yourself that, you know what, this is just my hard thing and I'm going to figure it out, but it just doesn't have to be perfect. And just know that a lot of us struggle with this. And so you don't have to feel like you're doing it wrong.
These were fun questions. I'm glad we chatted about them.
I love that they're like on a big spectrum of topics, you know, and it just goes to show that you can find intentional, minimal living in every area of life.
Okay, I know I said that Catherine and I were going to talk about fitness. There was a point right before we talked about meal planning that we were talking about fitness as well. But this episode got a little bit too long, so I'm going to post it as a bonus at some point here in the next couple of weeks, so you can watch for that. All right, friends, I hope you enjoyed our conversation today. I hope you enjoyed this Q&A. Thank you so much for being here. And if you are enjoying the show, would you share it with a friend? You could share it via text message to a good friend, or you could just share it on Instagram or social media in general. This helps invite more women into this community. I'm so grateful for you for sharing and just for helping the show get in front of more eyes. This helps me continue to create the content, because if there are people to listen, then I will keep creating. So thank you for the encouragement that comes when you share the show. I hope you have a fantastic rest of your week. Go check out the Minimalish Book Club if you like to read and you want to read with a community of encouraging women. And I will talk to you right back here next Wednesday.
Hi there. I'm Rachel, and I'm the host of 3 in 30 Takeaways for Moms, a podcast for women who want to love motherhood as much as they love their children. In each 30-minute episode, my guests and I give 3 actionable takeaways that will help you make your family life a little better each week. I'd love for you to give us a listen. Listen to 3 in 30 Takeaways for Moms on the iHeart app or wherever you get your podcasts.